And welcome back. How are we getting on, fellas?
Doing good.
Doing
So today we're
well.
joined by Damon Dayoub. How about you introduce yourself, sir?
Well, hi. I'm Damon Dayoub. I play Lazar in Call of Duty.
That it? Is that like you were born and then that happens?
Man, I mean, I really don't remember anything before that. Yeah, I'm from Texas. I grew up in a city called El Paso. There's not a lot going on in El Paso, so I got out of there as soon as I could. And then I went to live in a city called Austin, Texas, which is a great city. A lot of fun. Not to hate on El Paso. El Paso's great. It's cool. But Austin is cooler. And went to school there. And then I used to be a bouncer at bars and restaurants or bars. And then I was a manager. I don't know. I just felt like something was missing in my life. And so my boss at the time told me I needed to get a hobby. And I decided to take an acting class and started doing that. And then about 3 months after that, I told him that I was going to quit my job and I was going to move to LA and become a famous movie star. And he told me I was a fucking idiot, but it worked out. So I moved to LA, wow, like 12 years ago, 12, 13 years ago. Yeah. And met my beautiful wife. We have a beautiful little girl, another one on the way. And so, yeah. You know, I just started acting and, you know, one thing kind of worked out and then another, and, you know, been able to have the life that I have and have my beautiful girls with me. And it's not too bad a life living in Southern California. It's not terrible. It's, you know, 72 degrees and sunny here. I don't know what it's like where you guys are.
Miserable.
Wet.
Yeah, not too bad.
Yeah, not
that's
not
my
too
story.
Bad, and it was just purely out of boredom you got into acting.
Yeah, you know, I loved movies. I was kind of a movie buff. I'd watched everything. And I just always wanted to take an acting class. And I did one class and with this woman named Mona Lee, who's an acting coach in Austin. And I just fell in love with it. There was one day I was doing a couple scenes and I went out back to have a smoke. And there was this storm coming in. I could see the clouds rolling through. And for some reason, man, it just clicked that this is what I was going to do for the rest of my life. And I don't know what it was, but it just... That's just was it. There's a feeling that you have when you're doing, especially something on stage. It's kind of surreal. And for me, there's nothing more gratifying than being in that moment with fellow actors. And you just kind of get lost and, you know, start to really... I mean, it's just I can't explain the feeling I get when I'm working. You know, TV, it's a little different because you do scenes so many times and you're different angles and so on. You know, when you're on stage, it's I think a little bit more gratifying because you can't fuck up. You know what I mean? Like there's no takes. There's no other takes. Yeah, this is it. And if you do screw up, you have to, you know, right back in the moment. So it's really challenging and it's just really great. And so, so then I decided I was going to quit my job and move to LA. And my best friend, who's been my friend since I was, you know, 8 years old, he had already lived in LA. And so he put a twin bed in his closet, because I couldn't afford an apartment. And I lived in his closet for 3 months until I found like a little side gig and could afford to get my own apartment. He's a hell of a guy, and still my best friend to this day. And I'll always be appreciative of that, you know, because without him, I don't know if I would have stayed. And, you know, if there was any time where I, you know, thought like what could have been if I didn't make that choice, you know, then I wouldn't have my beautiful wife and my daughter and the friends that I have here. And, you know, I don't think it would have been a life worth living, to be honest.
That went from really optimistic to just really sad really fast. But look, it looks like the stars aligned for you fairly well. You know, you're doing pretty okay, and you know, you got lovely family. Things are going well for you.
Yeah, things are going well, man. You know, it wasn't at the beginning. It was really hard. I didn't, you know, I mean, like I said, I had just done an acting class. I hadn't really like done anything. So when I got to LA, I didn't have an agent, I didn't have a manager, I didn't have anybody. So I faked a resume and I put all these productions that I was a part of in Texas that were all, you know, bullshit. It was all a lie. But I faked a resume and then I sent out like 100 and something mail outs to agencies, and I got one phone call, and that was my first agent, and he got fired a week later. So then I had to start from scratch again and find another agent. And then I found one, and then slowly started to book stuff. And you know, in the meantime, I bartended at a couple bars here in LA. It was the only way I could make a living at that time, because just, you know, I'd book like one or two things a year for the first couple of years. Started taking acting classes, realized how little I knew and how much I needed to learn. And then I got some really great opportunities and it went my way, you know? Yeah. So it's the dream, buddy. It's the dream.
you're really selling it here.
Whenever you hear like LA or Hollywood, all you hear is about these big famous celebrities that have millions and they own 6 houses. You forget how hard acting is for small time actors like yourself, or it's like people that they do the odd appearance or cameo in shows. Like you're just saying it there, like in the first 2 or 3 years, you said it was booking like one or two things a year. Like that's,
and the fact that you had to fake, you know, all that stuff just for a chance, that's pretty rough. And the fact only one got back to you as well.
I'd say
it's rough starting out as an actor, especially there. They're like, there's so many of you, like they really do have their pick.
Yeah, you you kind of fall into this bit where you want to do good, and which is like the biggest mistake ever, right? You can't worry about anybody else. Can't worry about what they think, if they like you, if they don't like you, because you're not going to please everybody. You just got to do it for yourself. And you know, this is how, you know, how I approach every role I do is, this is how I would do it. If you want to pay me to do it, great. If not, this is how I would do it. And so, I have a ton of auditions, and you know, some go my way and some don't, but that's just it. You know, my daughter, I hope she doesn't want to be an actor. You know, I hope she doesn't, because the only way you do it is if you have to do it, if you love it. And, you know, that feeling that you get when you're doing it makes it all worthwhile, because otherwise, man, it's too tough an existence. You know, it's really, I'd rather her be anything else than an artist, because it's really difficult, you know. And it's one thing when you're single and it's just you, you know, you could give a shit, like whatever, you know. But when it's, you know, you have a family to provide for and stuff like that, like real. So you need to make sure that, you know, you're still doing it because you love it. And you know, the most important thing I think is to have people around you that support you. Because if you don't, it's that much harder. You know, There's a small percentage, a very small percentage of people that just knock it out of the park and get really lucky from the get-go. And others, you know, George Clooney has a great quote, you know, if you can't give it 10 years, don't give it a day. And it's the truth. You know, longevity is part of it. You know, you got to stick around, get better at your craft, and, you know, you'll get your opportunity.
I like that quote, though. But yeah, you know, you really want to be dedicated to it, because we've spoken to some actors, and like the time they've had trying to be an actor, pretty awful. You know, you could be working 200 jobs, or there could be months between different jobs, and you're trying to make the money last in between them. But
yeah,
some are fortunate, some aren't.
Absolutely. You know, look, if you're an actor, you're an actor. It just, you know, depends on whether or not you're making a living as an actor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I remember when I used to bartend, it used to drive me crazy because people would ask me, you know, what else do I do? And I'd be like, I'm an actor. And they're like, how's that going? And you're like,
yeah.
You're like, what do you do? And they're like, I'm an accountant. You're like, how's that going? You know what I mean? Like it's one of those things. Like if you're an actor, you're an actor. You just got to hope that you can be successful enough to make a good living doing it.
Isn't it? Reminds me of that. Do you know that thing? If you walk up to a comedian, the first thing you say is like, your first thing, you know, they expect you to say is tell me a joke. Like it's very weird the way, just because they're in public light and you know who they are, you expect them to always be on.
Yeah, the expectations we give people in different careers. Yeah. You know, like an actor isn't always an actor.
Telling them to pay my bills is like, it's not going to
work. Yeah, it's not. No.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. But on a lighter note, you know, rather than the despair and the agony of not getting roles, you did land a good one. You got Call of Duty Black Ops, Cold War, the newest installment. Yeah, man. And you got to play Lazar. And, you know, as we were saying, I think before we started, you know, the guy was always eating, and that's what I loved about him. Got the Burger Town shirt, he got the noodles half the time. You know, great character. And unfortunately, I do mean unfortunately, there's some lads out there, and just because they seen Park, they didn't save you.
You know, man, I think I've said it before, but I don't blame him. I mean, Park's pretty awesome, right? I mean, like, I would say Park, if I play video games, I'd play, and I definitely would say Park. I mean, she's beautiful. She's, you know, British. She's she's awesome, right?
I don't want to hear it. If you save Park over Lazar, I hate you. Sorry. No.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was a lot of fun. And Lily, who plays Park, is exceptional. And we had a lot of fun. You know, we actually kind of created that whole that little romance between them on our first day of shooting. We talked a little bit about, you know, I threw a wink at her when we were doing one of the scenes. It was the scene where she where you guys go into the safe house for the first time, and I threw a little wink at her, and the director was like, did you just wink at her? And I was like, yeah, I feel like Lazar has a thing for her. And he was like, yeah. And so then when we went back and did it, you know, did more scenes, they created something, you know, for them. And so there's all those lines about, you know, he puts in a lot of work on her. Like he tries to get her to notice him a lot. And so, you know, but yeah, I still, one of the guys sent us a clip of, you know, post the rooftop where, you know, if you save Lazar Park, and it didn't seem like Park was very sad that she lost Lazar. You know what I mean? Like she didn't really give a shit. She just kind of keeps on going on. So it's kind of, you know, it pissed me off a little bit. And I thought she would be a little sad about losing this guy, but apparently not. She didn't care that much about him. Sad, very sad.
What can you do?
As I say,
what can you do?
If you pick Park over Lazar,
well, there you go.
Towards you are known.
I I remember we got Thomas to do a playthrough on the channel, and we got a bit of, oh, my name's not Thomas anymore. When I came in here early, the name was Thomas. When we had him play, there was a lot of division between Pick and you or Park. Yeah, it's heartbreaking. The fact it's even a question.
It was more like, I'm just going to wait this out so Park has more, you know, seconds to live kind of thing. Just nice. In my mind, it was always, you know, like 100% I couldn't.
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
when you were preparing for the role, what was that like?
Well, like
you
know,
guys had to do a lot of this from home.
Yeah, well, at first we got to be in the studio. And so, you know, me and, you know, the director and the writers, we talked about what, you know, who Lazar was, you know, what, you know, how he speaks, how he carries himself. I had my ideas, they had their ideas. So we kind of just molded them together. You know, when it comes to playing a character that doesn't look like you, you know, is bigger than you, you know, even though I'm, you know, 6'3", he's a beast of a man. And he's been through a lot more than I have. So, you know, I wanted to carry him with a little bit of swagger, you know, drop his shoulders a bit and, you know, have a more methodical kind of like ogre-ish walk to him. And then with his voice, you know, I've done, you know, Arabic accents, you know, before for other shows. But, you know, I wanted him to have, you know, to be kind of quiet. You know, he's such a big guy. Wanted it to be, you know, he only speaks really when he needs to. And when he does, it's a little bit quiet, which is challenging when you're doing, you know, voiceover stuff, because you don't want to be too quiet. So yeah, we just kind of played a little bit with it. And I think we found it about halfway through the first day of rehearsals, you know, what worked, what didn't. And so, you know, Lazar was born, and it was a lot of fun to play him.
Yeah, and you know, people love it. You know, it was an amazing game when it came out, and still is.
Yeah.
I don't know. I know you play like certain characters in the Zombies multiplayer. Did Lazar make it in there, Thomas? You're a big Zombies player.
I don't think Lazar.
No. Yeah. I don't think Lazar's in there. I think he's just in the campaign. Hmm. Yeah. It's too bad.
It's too bad, guys. That would have been amazing.
Yeah. Come on, Activision.
Come on, make it happen. Where's the DLC? Where's the next map? Lazar only mode.
Right.
But yeah, I don't even know what to say.
the campaign was great, and from all the actors we've talked to, there seems to be such a close connection between you and like all the cast. You all got along very well, and it's cool, very cool to see. Like,
yeah, you know, I was talking with Reggie and Bruce about it earlier. Actually, we just clicked immediately. You know, there's always an asshole on a set. There's always somebody. There's always somebody that's just like, and if you don't know who it is, probably you. And, you know, from on this one, we just all really got along famously. And then when we went up to Raven, you know, me, Damon Allen, Bruce and Reggie went up to Raven in Wisconsin to do some training up there. Man, we all got along like it was like we had known each other for years. And, you know, we all have a group text message that we actually talk almost on a daily basis, you know, with Chris Payne Gilbert and Lily and Piot. And man, we all really wanted this game to be great. We all really supported each other and whatever we were doing. And, you know, I think we have lifelong friendships because of it. You know, it's one of my favorite jobs I've ever done was working with these guys. And not only them, but, you know, the animators, the director, the, you know, everybody from Raven and Activision were just, there's a guy named Jeff Scoobel. I might be ruining his last name, but, you know, when we were in Wisconsin, man, they were just so gracious, so kind. They were just really wonderful people to work with. If anybody who's listening to this ever has an opportunity to work on a Call of Duty game, you will not regret it. The best opportunities of your career.
For sure. We've interviewed a lot of Call of Duty actors and, you know, never a bad report.
Yeah.
But when you booked the job, did you know it was a Call of Duty game? Because they tend to not let you know until the last seconds.
No, I didn't know until I got in to do the rehearsal. And Ivy, who's our casting director, was like, do you know what game this is for? And I was like, no. She was like, well, it's a big one. I was like, okay, all right. And she was like, it's Call of Duty. And I was like, okay. And Bruce was right there. He's like, you don't really know what Call of Duty is. And I was like, no, I don't. I don't know what that is. And he was like, man, it's a pretty big game. I was like, cool. Let's get to work. You don't know anything. You don't know anything from your audition. You don't know anything until you book the job. Yeah.
They're probably better off doing that, in all fairness, because it's such a big thing. And if anything gets out, like any leaks, they're kind of fucked. Like there's already people predicting the next game, and I don't even know if they're making it yet.
Well, I'm sure they are. You know, I think each game takes about 3 years from inception. So they know what they're doing, you know, ahead of time. You know, and they have, you know, Activision has multiple production companies that kind of tend to each game. And Raven was our primary, you know, production house that did, you know, Black Ops Cold War. So, you know, they know what they're doing. I mean, I can't believe that they pulled it off during a pandemic, to be perfectly honest.
That was impressive, you know, doing a lot of it through Zoom and stuff.
Yeah. You know,
just doing it from home. It's crazy.
Yeah. You know, all of us had to do all of our voice stuff from home, and they couldn't do any more performance capture stuff with us in the studio, which means that Jeff and his team had to do so much more work in Wisconsin, and they did a, you know, a brilliant job. They really killed it.
You know, one of the major complaints about the game, and it's a good complaint to have, is that the campaign wasn't long enough. You know, what they did do was just so intense, you know, almost addictive, but you know, you're always looking for more by the end of it. Do you think, what do you think they could have added to, if anything?
Again, I don't play video games. So
have you even,
I don't know.
Come on. Have you even played this one? You're in it.
Oh
my God.
Dude, my wife, look, if I played video games when we met, then I probably would get away with it. But if I started playing video games, you know, 5 years into our marriage, this marriage ain't going to last. She's in a divorce.
You know, I'm not going to explain to her, look, honey, darling, you know, apple of my eye. You know, I was in one of the biggest games of the year. You give me a break.
I don't have time, man. I don't have time. But, you know, I've heard really good things about the campaign itself. I feel like I would have loved to have, you know, done more work on it, but you know, that could also have been the pandemic. You know, you know, there were a lot of factors that are out of my hands, but you know, I wish we could have done more, because again, like I said before, we all got along so well that we wanted to do as much as possible together. But you know, there was a global pandemic that came up. So what can you do?
Kind of unavoidable, in all fairness.
I haven't really heard about it.
Unless you're in New Zealand.
The whole thing about like this whole global pandemic they keep talking about. Like,
yeah,
I've seen it once or twice, like maybe.
How would you stop?
Yeah, I saw one person wearing a mask, and that was it. I don't know what they're crying about.
Yeah, maybe in the U.S., maybe in the U.S., buddy, but here we just wear our masks. Dude.
Yeah, man, you know, you've had some weird stuff there with COVID, in all fairness.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. We've handled it about as poorly as you could possibly handle it. You know, it seems like we're one of the only countries that are even debating if it's a big deal or not.
But the top fields, most of them are arguing about it and protesting about it. At both sides, you know, wanting to do it and then not wanting to do it, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you know, look, I totally understand, you know, when you're doing, you know, economic shutdowns, stuff like that, like, you know, livelihoods are being threatened. You know, people, you know, there are people that have been out of work for almost a year now. There are, you know, businesses that are closing that have been around for decades, you know, mom and pop shops. And my heart goes out to them. My heart goes out to any family that's, you know, had a deal with, you know, COVID-19, you know, whether they lost somebody or they got sick. You know, it's really tough. It's really tough. I don't know what the right answer is, and I'll just stay there. You know what I mean? I have my opinions, but you know, I'm not a scientist. I'm not in politics. It's not up to me. So I'll just hang out with you guys on the podcast and do a little acting. And that's up my alley.
Christ, oh, there you go. I wish more people had that mentality of I'm not a scientist. Because everybody watches YouTube for an hour and think they're a fucking genius.
It's crazy. Oh man. And with Twitter and, you know, all the social media platforms, everybody's got, you know, a bullhorn to voice their opinions for better or for worse. And, you know, it's tough out there.
I guess it's what comes with having free speech, isn't it? You're going to have free speech.
You're saying it like it's a bad thing.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying there's stupid people who have free speech and you just got to deal with them.
Yeah, you know, look, I'm all about people having their opinions, whether it's, you know, educated or not. You know, it does when people who are, you know, politicians who are, you know, civil workers and they're, you know, ascribing themselves to theories that aren't based in fact. I think that's a problem. But it's, you know, I'm also not about censorship either, so I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah. What was I going to say? You caught me off guard there, Thomas. Even with like the people, you know, people not being scientists and having opinions on it, you know, like the information is very available. You know, if you dig deep enough. And one thing that was funny, what you said a second ago, Damon, is I'm not a politician and I'm not a scientist. You know, it's kind of weird how they politicized it around the world.
Yeah, especially here. You know, I don't know how it's been there, but you know, when you have people in the highest positions downplaying it and also peddling conspiracy theories about it, like you're the ones that should be the most educated on it. And you know, it's just a real scary time. It's a weird time, I think, in the world when it comes to that sort of stuff. And it makes you also think like, what's real and what can I trust? And you know, people tend, you know, all the algorithms on your phone, all that stuff, they kind of fall into, you know, your narrative of what you're kind of leaning towards, and they perpetuate that and exploit that. Yeah. And then you go down this rabbit hole and it's kind of hard to get back. So
it's not as intelligent as people would think. You know, like if you looked at puppies and only puppies all day, you're gonna get puppies. It's whatever, you know, your watch hour is going into. So whatever you're like, you're watching for the longest amount of time. So if you spend that half hour video on, let's say, flat earth, you know, you're gonna get like a lot of that stuff for the next ages. And you know yourself, it's hard to cleanse your YouTube timeline if ever you have a weird one in there.
Wait, the earth isn't flat?
Oh no. Well, we have a guy debating that on Monday with us. He's on the Alex Jones show.
Man. Oh man.
It's gonna be really interesting.
Wow. I had no idea. No idea. Well, I appreciate that, guys.
I know it's hard to believe at first that it's not flat, but listen,
right.
Once you see the pictures.
How do we all stay, if it's not flat, how do we all stay on the ground?
Listen, is I it? Know what you're thinking.
I think the secret is that we're curved.
They
ah,
we're bending, man. We're bending. We're like worms. We're curved.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Eyes.
Yeah.
See the way our eyes are round. That's why the curve is.
That's right.
If our eyes were that's flat, right. It would just look flat. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like
that's right. Wake up, we're sheeple. Curved.
Wake up, sheep. Yeah.
What if we're the curve ones? Oh, geez.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Exactly. Perfect sense. Yeah.
I don't know how we got here.
No. We're saving this debate for Monday, though. I'm looking.
Yeah, we'll talk about this Monday. But besides, you know, Call of Duty, you have a lot more acting credits than just that. And then you also said earlier on you did theater. And, you know, out of all the various acting you can do, like voice acting, TV, movies, theater, which would be your favorite?
Well, I mean, you know, doing theater is a lot of fun. You know, like I said, you're just kind of lost in the moment. You do a lot of preparation to get there. TV acting is amazing. You know, doing films, you know, I have actually, you know, the bulk of my career has been television acting, which has been amazing and lucrative. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. Films, I think, you know, I'd love to do more films just because you're out there for months at a time. You know, and I'm all about the camaraderie. I love being with people. I love being around people, which has made COVID and the shutdown difficult for me, because I love being around people and I love getting to know them. And there's just a camaraderie that you start to have with people, you know, when you're on a set like that. You know, the shows that I've done for extensive amount of time, you know, I'm still friends with all those people. You know, because you just create relationships that, you know, I think are really important.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, we've had other actors on before saying, like, unfortunately or fortunately, depending on your situation, it is also a bit of who you know. So, like, you know, having friends into the show can help you get into the show or whatever.
Right. Blah, blah, blah. Absolutely, man. You know, and you don't want to be known as an asshole. You know, you know, I mean, you know, there are some great actors who are, you know, don't have, you know, are known to be a bit difficult, but they're really great actors.
You have any personal experience with that?
With people who have been assholes?
Acting alongside. Yeah.
Just name them.
Yeah.
Name drop.
Just name them. No, I can't do that. But, you know, you know, sometimes when you get to a certain level, you forget how hard it was to get there. And you also forget how many millions of people would trade shoes with you in a heartbeat. You know, you don't realize, you know, when you're doing a show for a couple seasons and you're just like, oh, I'm over the show. I'm over all of it. I just want to, you know, you realize you're living the dream that millions of people out there wish they could be living. So yeah, you know, yeah, this might suck for you because you're making a ton of money doing an episode of television and working like, you know, 5 day weeks, but you know, everybody wishes, you know, every actor out there that's struggling wishes that they could be in your shoes. So have a little respect and, you know, treat this like it's, you know, like it's a luxury, like you're grateful to be there. You should be grateful to be there every day. So yeah, I've worked with people that, you know, think they're better than the show or think that they're not getting the respect they deserve or, you know, so on. You know, I've had moments of being a dick before because I didn't agree with a decision. And, you know, you live and learn, you know.
Yeah, you have to make mistakes to learn from them, in all fairness.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And watching, you know, I've watched, you know, people that have had extensive careers who are famous, and I've watched them interact with other people. And you're like, yeah, that's how I want to be. That's how you're a professional. And then I've watched people that have also, you know, have been big stars and you're like, wow, they're just terrible. They're just terrible people. So, you know, you just, you live and learn, and you watch people and you go, okay, this is what I want to be. And then you just, you know, be it, you embody it.
Mm. Yeah. You really can't go into it wanting it to be like an ego thing. Cause at least I hope people be able to detect it fairly fast. That's one thing we've had, said to us by a couple of actors. If you're going into it for the wrong reasons, everyone will be able to tell, especially with cast and directors.
Yeah, well, also, you know, if you're an actor and you're like, you're desperate, it reads in your audition, which means you're definitely not going to get it. And then, you know, if you're on set and you're seeking the approval of the people around you, it reads. People aren't going to want that. They don't want you to, like, when they yell cut, to look at the director and wait for them to say, oh, great job. Look, nobody's going to give you a pat on the back, you know, and it's rare in life, period. Nobody's going to give you a pat on the back. Nobody's going to say good job every time. You need to be comfortable with what you've done, what you're doing, and realize that you're a professional and there's a reason they hired you, because you're good, you know, and just go with that. You know, I've worked with other actors before who are just like constantly needing approval. And that's not a way to live life, man. And it's definitely not a way to do your job.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate, but what can you do? Yeah. I guess that's what we do as people. You know, we kind of seek approval, or like, no one's going out there looking, you know, for everyone to call them a dickhead, you know? You know, you want the opposite of that, in fairness. To a degree.
I think to a degree, but you know, you're a human being, you know, you should know who you are at this point. Like, I'm 40 years old. I should know who I am. I should know that I'm a good human being, and that I'm a good father and a good husband and a good friend and a good actor. And, you know, I know what I'm doing, and I don't need somebody else to tell me good job, because it's, you know, that's nice. I mean, that's nice, but like, it's just, you can't expect that to happen, and you just have to be comfortable with what you bring and who you are. And that's just it in anything you do, just like you guys doing this podcast, you know what I mean? Like, this is what we do. We like what we do. We're good. And that's it. You know what I mean? And any other haters can just get the fuck out of here.
Like what you do. Sounds like a nice life down
there. That sounds all right. Yeah.
Just tell me more about that life and what you do, kind of thing.
I'll just do a little voice. I'll do a little voice memo to you guys every day, and you'll wake up to my beautiful voice, just giving you guys deep insight into not giving a fuck about anybody and what they care about and what they think.
Jeez, you start your own podcast. there you go.
I'd lull people to sleep with this voice, man. No way.
That's there's a huge market for ASMR, sir. I mean, your voice whispering.
Oh, Jesus. ASMR is so dumb.
Put any man or woman to sleep.
What is this?
ASMR.
You know what this is?
They like whisper into the microphone, and it's supposed to be it's supposed to calm people down. Don't know if it actually does. I've never tried it.
Yeah, there's a certain amount of people that it affects, and if it doesn't affect you, it's never going to affect you. But for some people, it just does. So they might do things like they get like a, I'm not going to do it, but like they get like a wrapper or something, and they crinkle it beside the microphone, or they like whisper into the microphone, or they'll do other things into the microphone, you know, normal stuff normally, but you know, different variety. And I guess people like it. Sounds weird, doesn't it?
Huh.
You should really it's fairly new market. You'd be perfect for it.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm going to look it up right now. Yeah, I'm going to look it up right when I get off with you guys. Maybe I have a new career ahead of me. You never know.
I'm messing. There you go. Please don't.
But, you know, another big game that you got to do this year was Red Dead Redemption 2. You got to do a couple of voices for that, but just some smaller ones. You weren't exactly Arthur Morgan, in fairness. But how was that role for you? Or roles, many?
I mean, it was cool. It was a long day. I just did one day, and they, you know, they hooked up the gear on my face so they could read my facial expressions. And I did, I mean, I did like a dozen characters. You know, I did so many of them. One was like a sheriff. One was some guy that was like hiding out in a shitter in an outhouse. There was like all these different range of characters. And it was a lot of fun, man. It was a long day. I was there for like eight hours. Just doing, you know, all these different characters, but it was a lot of fun. Again, I had no idea what game it was, no idea what it all entailed. And, you know, I'd heard of Red Dead Redemption, but I didn't know what, you know, how big it was.
To explain it easily, the biggest cowboy game of all time.
Well, there you go. Happy to be a part of it. Happy to be a part of it. Yeah.
Awesome. You know, It's kind of off-putting, but I love that you're honest about it. You know that you're not really aware of like the games, like, you know, when we had Bruce on, he was basically the same, but a bit more idea with Adler, or we had people on from Red Dead, and you know they knew their characters intimately. It's a little off-putting today, but I guess it's normal for some people.
Well,
like, you don't need to be an expert in everything you do; otherwise, you have a lot of useless knowledge. You know. Like, you've been an actor for how long? You can't have all this intimate detail of everything you've done.
Right. I mean, you know, I've been acting for 10 years. I don't, you know, I mean, like, you know, my commitment is to the character. It's not to the show or the movie. My commitment is doing my job as the character, because that's what you hire me to do. And, you know, I'll do publicity and stuff like that for the show or game or whatever I'm doing, but my commitment is to the character. That's what you pay me to do, and then that's where my job ends, pretty much. You know, all the other details are above my pay grade, man. And I stay out of it.
You might be better off,
dude. But, totally, man.
Yeah, but you, soon enough, you're doing a bit of a signing for your character, aren't you?
Yeah, Lily and I are going to do an Instagram live signing on Sunday at 10 a.m. Pacific time. So we're going to do a little signing together. I think the group, we're going to try and do something with I think his name's John Leach, on Saturday. We're going to join his Facebook live session. I'll chat a little bit, but then Lily and I are going to do the Instagram signing. We have a bunch of cool photos from Call of Duty that we'll be signing live, and then I believe the whole group is going to do another group signing in another month or so, all together. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. And how's that being done? The signings, like, with COVID, are you guys doing it online? How's it working?
Yeah, we do it online. There's my link for mine is in my bios for Instagram and Twitter. It's through a site called Streamily, and you basically put your order in, you say what you want to, you know, have me sign for you. And then it shows up on my list, and I do it all live. You know, I go down the list one at a time, and then sign them up and ask questions. You know, people can ask questions. We give you answers. It's just like going to a Comic-Con, but it's virtual.
Yeah.
Should be pretty cool. I've never done, I mean, I've done Comic-Cons before, but I've never done it like this. So this should be fun.
What did you do Comic-Con for?
Capcom? I did San Diego Comic-Con for Stitchers. It was a sci-fi procedural show that I did for 3 years. We went to New York Comic-Con, LA Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con. And I mean, that's awesome, dude. I mean, you know, you just don't realize sometimes the effect that these shows, these video games, all these things have on people. You know, just like Call of Duty, you know, I didn't realize how big of a game it was. I didn't realize how many people played it. People that I know who, there's no way they have time to play video games, but they wake up at like 3:30 in the morning before their family wakes up and plays, you know, they play the campaign when it first comes out, beat it, and then they go on to the next one. Like, you know, and so when you go to a Comic-Con, it is just, it's so cool to see all the fans and to meet them and to get to know them a little bit, you know, where they're from, why they like the show, why they like the game. And it's just, I mean, it's really cool. And to think as a small, you know, this might sound, you know, a little arrogant, but to think about having, you know, a small part in playing, you know, in a character that resonates with these people is, I mean, it's a really cool feeling. It's really cool feeling. And I mean, you know, the fans are what pays my salary. I mean, like, for anything I've ever done, if it weren't for the fans, I wouldn't have a job. You know, I mean, the fans, you know, the people watching it, the people buying the video games, like, without you guys, we don't have jobs. So, you know, it's really wonderful to be there and show, you know, appreciation for you guys and to talk a little bit with you all.
Have you had any particularly notable encounters with fans yet?
For Call of Duty now, because it's, you know, it's just my voice, you know, Lazar and I look a little bit different. But yeah, you know, I've had some fun experiences with fans. You know, I always like the fans that they don't want to like come up to you and talk to you because they're a little nervous. So they'll like stand in front of you or be at like the table in front of you and like raise their phone up and like take a photo, like it's a selfie, but then you see yourself in the photo right behind them. You know, it's fun. It's cool, fun stuff like that. Comic-Con was great though, because there's people just coming up to you everywhere you go, wanted to take pictures with you and talk a little bit. It's just, I mean, like I said before, I love talking to people, so I don't mind it one bit. I'll do it all day.
There you go. Yeah. You spent the last 40 odd minutes doing it here anyway.
Yeah.
But there you go.
Let's go. 3 more hours. Let's do it.
Oh, geez. Well, you want to pull a Joe Rogan experience?
Let's talk about the universe real quick. Anyway, no.
Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
The universe elk meat for the next hour and a half. No, oh, Damon, we'll let you go. Barely. You're lucky to get away this early. if people want to check you out, where can they find you?
You can just find me on Instagram or Twitter, at Damon Dayoub. You know, I'm always there, so give me a shout.
Perfect. Well, Damon, thanks so much for coming on. You've been a terrific guest. Hopefully we'll have you on again in the future.
You say that's all the guests, buddy. It's my pleasure. Wish you guys the best.
We don't tell them all to come back, in all fairness.
Just the ones we like, so feel privileged. Because now
I do.
I do. Well, you guys take care of yourselves, and I appreciate it.
100%.
All right.
Thanks, mate.